Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're going on a little journey to Gotska Sandön. It's a Swedish island, really interesting place, a hidden world of biodiversity. And you know our guide? Well, it's a scientific paper from 1969, a real time capsule of what the island's ecosystem looked like back then. And trust me, it's more than just a list of species. We're going to get into how life on the island was changing even way back then. We've even got a bit of a mystery. Some species found in 1868 had vanished by the time this research was done. Intrigued. Yeah, let's dive in.
Yeah, it's fascinating how this paper reveals an ecosystem that's in transition. It builds on earlier work, adds new discoveries, and raises some pretty perplexing questions about what happened to some of the island's inhabitants. It really highlights how dynamic these environments can be.
Okay, so let's set the scene. Our main source is a report in the Entomologisk Tidskrift Journal. It's about a 1968 expedition to Gotska Sandön. Now, butterfly enthusiasts, get ready, because this report is heavily focused on your favorite creatures. There's a key figure here, Brahe Hansen, an entomologist who practically wrote the book on Gotska Sandön's butterflies in the early 60s.
Hansen's work was really important. This 1968 expedition actually built on his findings, adding a remarkable 28 new butterfly species to the island's record. Talk about a butterfly bonanza. The paper reports a total of 159 butterfly species recorded during the expedition. Imagine that. 159 different types of butterflies fluttering around this one island.
Wow, 159. That's incredible. Were they all over the island, or did they tend to congregate in specific areas?
Great question. They discovered most of these species in a place called Kirkudden. Interestingly, it seems Hansen didn't study that particular location. They also mentioned other key locations, like Kapellingen, Hamnudden, Kamgarden, and even the large lighthouse. Can you picture scientists chasing butterflies around a lighthouse?
Ah, that's a sight I'd love to see. But out of all those butterflies, were there any particularly rare or special ones that they found?
Absolutely. They captured a species called Horizum amulata. And get this, there were only two previous specimens known in all of the Nordic countries, both from Gotska Sandön. Talk about a rare find.
Okay, so I'm picturing these scientists out on the island, butterfly nets in hand. What else can you tell me about their methods?
Well, the paper mentions their primary method was evening netting, which paints a pretty vivid picture, don't you think? Waiting for dusk, nets poised, the anticipation of what they might catch.
It sounds almost magical, but I'm curious, did they study any other insects? What about moths?
That's where things get interesting. The paper specifically notes that there's no data on nocturnal moths. It seems the island's national park status limited the use of light traps, which are typically used to study moths. It's a shame, because moths play such a crucial role in pollination and are a vital part of the food web. Who knows what amazing moth species they might have missed?
It makes you wonder what other secrets are hidden in the island's darkness. But even without the moths, it sounds like Gotska Sandön has an incredible variety of habitats.
You're absolutely right. The paper includes a detailed map highlighting the island's varied landscapes. We're talking sandy areas, grasslands, windswept dunes, lush deciduous forests, meadows, alder marshes, and even spruce forests. It's a true tapestry of ecosystems.
Okay, I'm officially adding Gotska Sandön to my travel bucket list. But wait, we've been so focused on butterflies, I almost forgot. This deep dive isn't just about them. There's a whole other world of fascinating creatures on this island.
You got it. Before we get too carried away with butterflies, let's turn our attention to the island's eight-legged inhabitants, the spiders.
Ooh, spiders. Okay, I'm ready for a change of pace. What can you tell me about Gotska Sandön's spider population?
Well, before this 1968 expedition, our knowledge of Gotska Sandön's spiders was pretty limited. Mm-hmm. There were studies in 1868 and 1948, but that was about it. So this paper really represents a significant leap in our understanding of the island's spider fauna.
And what did they find? Anything interesting?
Well, absolutely. In fact, they discovered 17 new spider species on the island. Imagine the thrill of finding a species that no one else has ever documented before.
17 new spider species. That's amazing. But I have to ask, if they found so many new species, did they also rediscover the ones from those earlier studies?
That's where things take a curious turn. They didn't find any of the spider species documented in the 1948 study, and none from the 1868 study were relocated either. It's a real head-scratcher. What happened to them? Did they migrate? Did their populations decline? It really makes you wonder.
That's a mystery worthy of Sherlock Holmes. We're already getting a sense of how dynamic and ever-changing ecosystems can be. Okay, before we jump into the next part of our deep dive, can we take a step back for a second and just appreciate how much we've learned already? We've explored different habitats, we've met some amazing butterflies, and we've even stumbled upon a spider mystery.
You're right, we've covered a lot of ground. But we've only just begun to scratch the surface. In the next part, we'll delve into even more detail about some of the specific species found on Gotska Sandon. We'll uncover fascinating names, unique features, and maybe even some clues about those missing spiders. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to our deep dive into the fascinating world of Gotska Sandon. We've already explored the diverse habitats and discovered some amazing butterflies and a puzzling spider mystery. Now I'm ready to meet some of these creatures face-to-face, so to speak. The paper has this massive table listing all the scientific names, but I'm hoping we can bring some of these species to life for our listeners.
Absolutely. Let's trade those long Latin names for some captivating stories. Remember all those diverse habitats we talked about? Well, each one is home to a unique cast of characters.
Oh, I like where this is going. Let's start with the butterflies. Any standouts come to mind?
Let's see. Let's picture ourselves walking through a sun-drenched meadow. You might spot a butterfly with a name that sounds like it belongs in a Shakespearean play, Aglaeus urticae, commonly known as the small tortoise shell. The paper notes it was fairly common on Gotska Sandon back then. Now you might be thinking, common, so what? But the abundance of a species like this can actually tell us a lot about the health of the ecosystem.
Okay, I see what you mean. So it's not just about the rarity of a species. It's about understanding its role in the bigger picture. So tell me, what makes the small tortoiseshell so important?
Well, for one, it's a vital pollinator, flitting from flower to flower, spreading pollen, helping plants reproduce. Plus, it serves as a food source for birds and other insects, making it a crucial link in the food web. Seeing a lot of them suggests a healthy balance in the ecosystem.
Fascinating. So a seemingly ordinary butterfly can actually reveal a lot about the environment. Okay, I'm ready for another encounter. What other butterfly caught your eye?
Okay, let's imagine ourselves venturing into the dappled light of the forest. There you might find a butterfly with a name that always makes me smile. Pararge egeria, the speckled wood. You know how some butterflies have those amazing eye spots on their wings? Well, the speckled wood is a prime example. These spots are thought to startle predators, giving the butterfly a chance to escape.
Ooh, that's clever. I can just picture it. Fluttering through the trees, flashing those eye spots. It's amazing how these seemingly small details can play such a big role in survival.
It really is. Now let's journey to another part of the island, perhaps closer to the coast where those beautiful sandy areas are. You might spot a flash of vibrant copper wings. That's Lycina flaeus, the small copper. These tiny butterflies have a fascinating life cycle with their caterpillars specifically feeding on sorrel plants.
Ah, so we're seeing those connections between the butterflies and the plants they depend on. It's a reminder that this biodiversity isn't just a random collection of species. It's a complex web of relationships.
Exactly. And speaking of webs, let's not forget those mysterious spiders. Remember how none of the species from the 1948 study were found in 1968?
Yeah, that was a real head scratcher. Did the paper offer any explanations?
Not directly, but it does provide some clues. It mentions that the 1948 study took place in August, while the 1968 expedition was in June and July.
Different times of year. So could that be the reason? Do spiders have like a seasonal schedule?
It's certainly a possibility. Different spider species might have different activity patterns throughout the year. Some might be more prevalent in the summer months, while others emerge later in the season. The paper also notes some of the challenges they faced in collecting spiders, like difficulty accessing certain areas due to dense vegetation. It makes you wonder if the 1948 researchers simply looked in different spots or used different methods.
That makes sense. It highlights how even small variations in timing or technique can lead to different results. It's like trying to take a census of a city. You'll get different counts depending on the time of day and where you look.
That's a great analogy. It shows how these studies, while incredibly valuable, are still just snapshots in time. It's like trying to understand a movie by only watching a few frames.
It's amazing to think how much might have changed in the 56 years since this research was done. But okay, enough about the missing spiders for now. Let's talk about those 17 new spider species they found. Did any of them stand out?
One that I find particularly fascinating is Philodronus dispar. It's a type of crab spider. You know how some animals can camouflage themselves to blend in with their surroundings? Well, this spider takes it to a whole new level. It can actually change color to match its background.
Wait, a color-changing spider? That's incredible. I've heard of chameleons doing that, but a spider? What's the benefit of that?
It's all about stealth and surprise. It allows Philodromus dispar to ambush its prey. Imagine a fly landing on a flower, completely unaware that a perfectly camouflaged spider is lying in wait. Talk about a sneaky predator.
Wow, that's amazing. Okay, before we go full-on entomologist and arachnologist, let's take a step back and reflect on what we've learned in this section. It's not just about memorizing species names. It's about understanding the connections, the complexities, and the incredible adaptations that allow these creatures to thrive.
You've hit the nail on the head. Each species has its own story, its own role to play in the grand orchestra of the ecosystem. And this 1969 research gives us a glimpse into that intricate symphony.
It's like each species is a note, and together they create this beautiful melody. But I have a feeling there's more to this story, right? We've explored the habitats, met some of the inhabitants, and even pondered a few mysteries. But what does it all mean in the grand scheme of things?
That's a great question, and one we'll explore in our final part. We'll zoom out, look at the bigger picture, and discuss the broader significance of this research and its implications for the future of Gotska Sandon.
Intriguing. Well, listeners, you won't want to miss this. We'll be right back with the final part of our deep dive into the secret life of Gotska Sandon. Welcome back to the deep dive. We've journeyed through these really diverse habitats, met some fascinating creatures, even uncovered a few mysteries on Gotska Sandon. Now it's time to zoom out. Look at the bigger picture. What can we learn from this 1969 snapshot of the island's biodiversity?
Well, this paper,
yep,
and others like it, are really vital for understanding how environments evolve over time. They give us a baseline to measure change against. Imagine researchers returning to Gotska Sandon today, armed with this 1969 data. They could compare their findings species by species and see what shifted in the intervening years.
So it's like having a before photo, but instead of visuals, we're talking about this detailed inventory of life. That's a powerful tool for understanding the impact of things like climate change or habitat loss.
Right, absolutely. Those changes in species composition, those subtle shifts, can be like warning lights on a dashboard. They can tell us about the health of the ecosystem and alert us to potential problems.
That makes this research feel even more significant. It's not just about cataloging butterflies and spiders. It's about understanding the delicate balance of life on this island and what might be happening to it.
Precisely. It underscores the importance of long-term ecological monitoring. Without these studies, spread out over decades, we wouldn't be able to detect those crucial changes in our environment.
It's like those time-lapse videos of glaciers melting. You don't necessarily notice the change day to day, but over time, the impact is undeniable. These long-term studies are like the scientific equivalent, revealing the slow but steady transformations in our natural world.
That's a brilliant analogy. And speaking of transformations, remember how the paper mentioned some species were common while others were rare back in 1968? Wouldn't it be fascinating to know if that's still the case today? Has that balance shifted?
Oh, absolutely. What might have changed in the past 56 years? Have any of those common species become less abundant? Or have any of the rare ones made a comeback? I'm dying to know.
Those are the questions that drive ecological research. And that's what makes this 1969 paper so compelling. It sparks curiosity, encourages us to ask questions, and motivates us to continue exploring the mysteries of our natural world. It reminds us that ecosystems are constantly in flux, responding to a myriad of factors.
I don't know about you, but I'm ready to book a flight to Sweden and see Gotska Sandon for myself. Imagine walking through those diverse landscapes, feeling the wind in your hair, and searching for those elusive species we've been talking about.
I'd be right there with you. But even if we can't visit in person, we can still appreciate the beauty and complexity of this island. Thanks to the dedicated work of researchers like those who conducted this 1968 expedition, their findings are a gift, a window into a world we might never have known otherwise.
So to wrap up our deep dive into Gotska Sandon's secret life, I think the key takeaway is this. Every species, every habitat, every piece of data matters. It's all interconnected, and understanding those connections is crucial for protecting the delicate balance of our planet.
Beautifully said. And I'll leave our listeners with this thought. The next time you see a butterfly flitting by or a spider spinning its web, take a moment to appreciate the intricate web of life they represent. Who knows what secrets they hold or what changes they might be witnessing in our ever-evolving world.
Thanks for joining us on this journey to Gotska Sandon. Until next time, keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep diving deep.